Karen Hart Glass, the host of It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. As I mentioned last week, I'm celebrating my 7th year of It's All About Food. And if you're new to this program, thank you. If you're old to this program, thank you. If you're checking in every now and then, thank you. Thank you for caring. There's more and more information out there about how health and climate change are connected, and a lot of it comes down to food. Last week, I couldn't remember what PNAS stood for. I'm prepared today. It's kind of embarrassing sometimes. There are so many acronyms out there, and every field has their own vocabulary and their own acronyms. It's just impossible to keep up. But anyway, PNAS.org has a great article that came out a few weeks ago. And PNAS, are you ready, stands for Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This is not a slacker place. This is a prestigious source of information. And they published an article called Analysis and Valuation of the Health and Climate Change Co-Benefits of Dietary Change. And you've probably seen many different articles coming out, U.S. News and World Report, Time Magazine. Everybody's got their own spin and say on this very impressive article, which was put together by a number of impressive researchers from the Program on the Future of Food at the Department of Zoology at the University of Oxford, and the British Heart Foundation Center on Population Approaches for Non-Communicable Disease Prevention. These are the author affiliations for this report, and there's a lot of great information in it. What I wanted to talk about is how a lot of the mainstream media, like Time Magazine, for example, not my favorite source for information, although I rejoice when I see articles that promote the power of a plant-based vegan diet. Yes. So they reported on this PNAS article, and they entitled it How a Vegan Diet Could Help Save the Planet. Lovely. And but you have to understand that they're just looking for people to buy the magazine and to come to their site. So anything that has a sensational title, they're going to support. And what frustrates me is nothing's objective. And not even objective. Okay, we all have our own bent. We all have our own priorities. But I really would like to see magazines and newspapers really dig deep and do the research, and they don't. They just kind of spin things with a sensational title, and then they move on and kind of contradict everything they've said the following week with another sensational title. It's confusing. It's frustrating. Now, maybe part of the problem is they just don't have the funding anymore to do really in-depth journalism, and that's really a sad thing. And part of it has to do with this wonderful internet that we all love and take advantage of, but makes everyone a journalist and kind of lowers the price that organizations are going to pay for journalism. And a lot of us do this sort of thing for free. And so it's really hard to know what's real and what's true. For example, we just saw this wonderful thing come out of PNAS.org, and everybody's spinning on it, how eating a plant-based diet can also reduce climate change. We've been just talking about this for decades, and it's always wonderful when more reputable organizations talk about the power of plant foods and how it's not only excellent for health, but it's what's going to save the planet, at least save the planet as we know it, maybe human life and a lot of the other species. The planet will always be here, or at least it'll be here for a very long time. But Time Magazine, just a few weeks ago, put out an article called "Sorry Vegans, Here's How Meat Eating Made Us Human." And they were reporting on an article that was published in Nature. And it was the most ridiculous article in my mind. It was about some researchers at Harvard University. That's impressive, right? And the article in Nature had all kinds of impressive charts and graphs and lines going up and down with data. And what did they do? They had a group of people chew meat and root vegetables. And they counted how many chews were required. And they determined through a variety of these different studies and tests that the meat took less chews. And they just theorized. None of this is true. None of this is confirmed. It's just kind of like a fantasy idea that since it took less chews to eat the meat than the root vegetables, that maybe hundreds of thousands of years ago, that's how we evolved and became humans. And everybody like rejoices and says, yes, yes, we needed meat to make us human, and so now we should be eating more meat. I mean, it's just a ridiculous concept. And this was done at Harvard. And you know what I say? I don't care what happened 500,000 years ago, a million years ago. I know what's going on today. We've got 7 billion people on this planet, and we're cramming all of these innocent, sentient beings into filthy spaces so that we can grow them fast and kill them fast and eat them fast. It's a disaster, and it's affecting our health in a negative way, and it's affecting the planet in a negative way. And that's just the simple truth. And it's just really frustrating when you see these ridiculous headlines. And, you know, the latest thing is that the good thing is the word vegan is becoming more and more popular in mainstream media. They're including in all kinds of scripts in the movies and on television and commercials. Okay, people know about us. So we have to endure this time until we get to the next level where they don't feel like they have to make fun of us anymore, and they realize that eating plants is really the best thing for all of us. And not only is it the best for our health and for the planet and for the animals, but it's delicious. And every time I read in these articles, they always talk about how eating plant food is boring. And I want to say, hello, it's 2016. It is not boring. There's many, many different ways to prepare plant foods. They're far more exciting because there are so many more kinds of plant foods and all kinds of colors. They're really delicious. And even, you know, sometimes I just love steamed vegetables and brown rice. There's nothing wrong with it, but there's all kinds of herbs and spices and sauces and raw nuts and seeds and great things to make plant foods taste great. So I really get tired when I see those kinds of ignorant reactions and keep these myths going. But I highly recommend checking out the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS.org, and read their analysis and evaluation of the health and climate change co-benefits of dietary change. Don't read the summaries in these more mainstream publications. Go to the source. That's where you're going to get the best information, and you can make the most informed choices from the best information, the original information. Okay, moving on. I want to tell you I'm really excited about this. I mentioned it maybe last week. I'm not sure. Dr. Joel Fuhrman, my favorite doctor, he has a new book coming out this Tuesday, April 5th. It's called The End of Heart Disease. And if you're on his newsletter list, he recently wrote that he thinks this book, The End of Heart Disease, is his best, most important book ever. It's his largest book, over 430 pages. He's been working on it for over 2 years, and it's coming out on Tuesday. And guess what? I get to talk to him on Tuesday on It's All About Food. So I hope you'll join me next, excuse me, Tuesday for this really important program. And, you know, so many people have heart disease today, and it's really frustrating when I hear from friends and family and strangers even where their doctors, their cardiologists tell them you have heart disease, there's nothing you can do about it but to take these medications. And that's just not true, and we all need to be spreading this message, the power of plants, to save our loved ones and even our not-so-loved ones. So nobody should be dying of heart disease today, right? So many, I just keep hearing more and more stories about it, and it's very, very frustrating. And I look forward to the day when medical doctors understand that nutrition is a part of good health. Some of them are getting it more and more, but then there's this balance because they feel like we don't want that information. We want to keep things easy and simple. We want the pill. We want the surgery. It's too hard to eat healthy. And, you know, I guess that's everyone's choice. Not my choice. I pick delicious plant foods every day. Okay, so last Sunday was Easter. And if you know me by now, you know I'm not a religious person, but I am a foodie. And I love celebrating food related to holidays. So when people think of Easter, at least when I think of Easter, I think of two, quote, foods. One is chocolate. And then I'll tell you what the other one is in a minute. But let's talk about chocolate for a minute. Last year here at Responsibility and Living, my nonprofit, we did a video report called The Chocolate Story. And what I tried to do in that report is bring together all the different issues involving chocolate. And do you know what some of those issues are? There's the issue of, in the Ivory Coast, of children being used child slaves to harvest cocoa. And the Food Empowerment Project has been outstanding in updating and producing this chocolate list and letting us all know the vegan chocolates that are out there that do not use child slaves in harvesting their chocolate. Okay, so that's one thing, slavery. Then there's lead and cadmium. And there have been more reports testing different chocolates and finding high levels of lead and or cadmium in chocolate. And there are a number of organizations that have been doing this. There's an organization called As You Sow. And then there's a group called ConsumerLabs.com. Now, As You Sow has been publishing the tests that they're doing. I imagine they're expensive, and it's really hard to test every chocolate out there, so we cannot get all the information. Of course, individual manufacturers are supposed to be checking their own chocolate, and you know they either are or they aren't. And if they are and they discover that their cadmium and lead levels are above what is approved by the FDA, are they going to come out and let us know? You know, when it affects the bottom line, we can't be sure. So there are a lot of different chocolates that have lead and cadmium. It has nothing to do with being organic. It has nothing to do with being expensive or low quality. And as we hear more stories about lead in the water, for example, in Flint and in New Jersey and who knows where else, I think you can understand how there are toxins in our chocolate and in other food products, because these products, cocoa, for example, is a plant. It grows in the ground. It's watered. The water may have contamination. The soil might be contaminated from nearby industrial plants. Who knows what? And unfortunately, a lot of chocolate has lead and cadmium. So you have As You Sow, and then you have ConsumerLabs.com. Now, the thing about ConsumerLabs.com is you can only get their reports if you subscribe to their website. There have been a number of other organizations who have gotten their report and summarized some of the results, but they continue to update the results. I don't subscribe to ConsumerLabs.com. Maybe I should, but I don't have the most updated result. But if you really want to know, that might be a valuable report. So they're letting us know which chocolates have high amounts of lead and cadmium and which ones don't. Okay, so we have the slavery issue. We have the lead and cadmium issue. Then for people that are concerned about allergens, the FDA did a study a while ago and discovered many chocolates that said they were non-dairy had a lot of dairy in them. And that has to do with the fact that it's really hard to clean those chocolate machines. And there are companies that don't own their own, and they share it with other companies. And even though they may not use certain ingredients in their product, if somebody else uses those ingredients in their product and they use the same machine, even if they say that they don't have those ingredients, there's always that little line in small print saying may contain blah, blah, blah. And they have to say it because it can really have a deleterious effect if somebody has an allergic reaction to peanuts or dairy, other tree nuts. So there are the allergens. There's slavery in the chocolate. There's lead and cadmium. This is really sad, isn't it? Because chocolate's such a beautiful food. So what we did in the chocolate report is try to find the chocolates that don't have slavery in them, that don't have lead and cadmium in them, and don't have allergens in them. And it's really hard to know or get a complete picture because not all the chocolates have been tested. I remember when we did the report, it came down to endangered species was not ideal for allergens, but they were good for lead and cadmium and slavery. But unfortunately, as USO has just reported, that there are some endangered species chocolate that indeed contain, is it lead or, let's see, yes, lead and cadmium, both. Equal exchange, organic and fairly traded dark chocolate, very dark, 71% cocoa, has been shown to have lead and cadmium. That's equal exchange, excuse me. And endangered species chocolate, dark chocolate with 88% cocoa, has lead and cadmium. Nice, isn't it? And, you know, Ghirardelli and Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and Cadbury and Hershey, they're all in there. They all have some lead and cadmium. Not all their products, some of them. So you may want to check out these websites that are doing the reports, and you could listen to our chocolate story that you can find at Responsible Eating and Living. What do you do? I don't know. All I know is that for Easter, I found the, I don't know how to pronounce this, S-J-A-A-K. How do you pronounce it? Shajak chocolate. They're out of Petaluma, California. They're organic. They are listed on the Food Empowerment Organization, Food Empowerment Project chocolate list as not using chocolate that uses children to harvest the cocoa beans, and that's good. And they had some very cute little Easter chocolates that I managed to buy and get for Gary. And it was really a fun little moment having Easter eggs and Easter bunnies, and they had vegan little jelly beans. And there it is. There's the Mr. Softy food truck just in time because they have to play while I'm doing this program. Now, the other Easter food, popular Easter food, is the Easter lamb. And this is a hard one. How is it we can have all of these sweet, lovely, peaceful images of this precious baby animal, this cuddly, soft lamb, and then talk about slaughtering it and eating it and serving it up on a platter? I don't get it. And if you can explain it to me, I'd like to hear the explanation. But there are so many beautiful poems about the lamb, the peaceful lamb, the lovely lamb. And then after all the services, people go and eat lamb. Do we really think about what we're saying and doing all the time? Yeah. Anyway, I don't believe in eating lamb. Is it obvious? And that is that. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about in this first half of the program is something I learned in 2007 when going through my cancer treatment. I was at a point where I knew I really had to dig deep and do whatever I could to save my life. And that meant food, of course. But I knew that there were some other things, and And I went to visit a friend of mine in Canada who did some special technique. Some of them were neuro-linguistic. Some he did some Reiki and some other things I think he created himself. But one of the things we did that was really powerful was talking to my body. And back then, the way we did it was he said he was going to ask me some questions, but he wasn't asking me. He was asking the parts of my body that had cancer. And we set up a way for me to answer or for my body to answer, yes or no. And, you know, this may sound crazy, but it was so powerful. So I sat, I relaxed, and he said, okay, let me know what the yes, how you're going to respond with a yes. And I think one of my fingers twitched. So we decided that the yes answer, my finger would twitch. And then the no answer, my eye would blink. Something like that. And then he proceeded to ask a number of questions. And I did my best to really be in a relaxed state and not anticipate an answer. I didn't want my conscious or, I don't know how to explain it, but I didn't want my mind to answer. I wanted my body to answer, and it worked. And the answers were profound. I learned a lot. And I don't use this technique very often, but I find it can be very useful. It can be very powerful, and it can be scary. And I believe that our body knows everything about us. I believe our bodies have all of the answers, why we feel the way we do, the physical things that are bothering us. We have all the answers inside of us. And the question is, do we really want those answers? Because some of them can be scary. And so as you may know, I had the flu like 3 weeks ago. I can't believe it. And I did. And it lasted a week with fever. And then I had this cough that lasted over 2 weeks. And I'm really kind of at the end of it. And it was a few days ago, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, I just had it feeling crappy. And I was in my meditation. And when I was done with my meditation and I was all nice and relaxed and comfortable, I said, okay, I'm going to do this, asking my body what it needs right now to heal and get back to my high, vital, strong energy state. And I just relaxed and I said, okay, what is it you need? And right away, I got this answer, papaya, pineapple, basil, and kiwi. And I thought to myself, okay, this is either crazy or it's not, but I'm not going to judge. I like these foods. Gary and I went out. We got papaya, pineapple, basil, kiwi. You could look at my What Vegans Eat post. We made this beautiful salad of papaya, pineapple, and kiwi. And then I made an eggplant dish with fresh basil in it. Everything was delicious. I ate it. I felt better. Now, I know that the placebo effect is very powerful, and who knows, maybe there was a placebo thing in there, but I really recommend this technique of listening to your body, getting in a relaxed state, listen to your breath, relax your body, and then ask a specific question. You may be surprised what the answer is. And you can ask your whole body. You can ask specific body parts. It can be really, really profound. And let me know how it goes. If you discover something, I would love, really love to hear about it. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Got it? Very good. The last thing I wanted to talk about in this part before we get to the second part with my guest, who I can't wait to speak with, is soca wraps. Have you made soca? Soca is a crepe made from garbanzo bean flour and water. It's like the easiest thing. If you feel like you're not very good at making pancakes and flipping and whatever, if you have a decent pan, a decent spatula, there are tricks to the trade. It's a very easy kind of crepe to make because the chickpea flour, the garbanzo bean flour, is a very sturdy, sturdy, flexible flour. I like to spice it up. And I made a bunch, maybe like 10 or 12 of them. They make phenomenal wraps. So you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. Check out my What Vegans Eat post. Let's see, which one is it for day 410? And see what we did with the soca wraps. Really good. Okay.